I'm with David Mim today. He's the founder of Tidings and the new VP of Product Strategy at ThriveHive. And you may know him from Moz Local or GetListed. And GetListed was acquired by Moz in 2012. So welcome, David.
Hey, John. Great to be here. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Yeah. So I am really interested in hearing about this new position you have at ThriveHive. So it's VP of Product Strategy, and I think it just happened recently.
It did.
So tell me more about that.
Sure. So I just joined in just over a month ago in October of 2018, and the president of ThriveHive, Perry Evans, and I have been friends for quite a while, and Perry especially is a grizzled veteran of the local marketing world. And he and I had been chatting for quite a while. He'd been on my advisory board at Tidings, and just the pieces all kind of came together. I was basically at the end of my bootstrapped budget for Tidings and was looking for a position where I could apply my background and my expertise that wasn't going to be in a competitive space. And so Perry was, kind of looking for the same person at the same time. And so it just made sense. And so at ThriveHive, I have I wear a lot of different hats under that VP of product strategy role. I would say primarily at the moment anyway, it's my role is around evangelizing sort of best practices and some of the new, or not necessarily new, but some of the evolving tactics that help businesses rank better in Google, and figuring out then over time how to sort of productize those, whether on the sort of traditional agency side, which we do have, but primarily on the software side moving forward. So it's kind of a blend of a role of sort of speaking and marketing and that sort of thing, as well as product strategy.
So I remember reading something in sort of your announcement around that, and that I thought was interesting. And it said that you were saying that you were wrong in underestimating Google's striking commitment to giving businesses influence.
Yeah,
over sort of like posts and videos and menus and messages and stuff. What did you mean by that? And
sure.
And how does that help in what you're doing now?
Yeah. Well, so I'll start with the second question first, which is a little maybe easier to answer. So Google has released, probably close to a dozen new features within Google My Business, or at least attached to the knowledge panel, attached to the business profile, in the last 2 years. And, many of these features have the potential to be really impactful to businesses who are taking advantage of them. But from what I've seen just as a casual searcher over the last few years, like hardly anyone's using them. And so, we definitely, ThriveHive as a company, we are placing a big bet on Google My Business as kind of the increasingly the starting point for an SEO campaign for a local business. I am not saying either that websites are going away, but certainly their position in the search results has diminished over time, over the last few years. And Google seems to be, they've just invested in Google My Business in their small business facing product in a way that I have not seen since I started out in the space in the mid 2000s. So, Mike Blumenthal and I have been following the space for a long time, and Mike's been, I forget what they're called now, but like a Google product expert or something like that. So he's been a little closer to the ground in terms of when these features come out and, Google's intent behind them and that sort of thing. But, he and I have been kind of bantering back and forth for the last couple of years about Google's commitment to this stuff. My opinion has been up until the last year to 18 months that, Google was primarily focused on driving ad revenue at all costs, including user experience and including, small business engagement. And I think maybe what's shifted is that they've felt businesses, and I certainly hear this from businesses who are feeling the pinch from Facebook's organic newsfeed changes, and Google, I think, sees an opportunity to convert some of the activity that businesses had been putting into Facebook into Google, and therefore thereby bringing them potentially along as advertisers over time. So I still feel pretty strongly that Google is going to monetize more and more and more of the SERP, and that ads remain their primary focus, but their path to getting small business advertisers is considerably different than I had foreseen a few years ago.
So you said something a little earlier that caught my attention, which is businesses aren't using these tools.
Yeah.
So why do you think they're not using them, and what is your plan? What is Google's plan kind of, utilize these?
So, I mean, a big reason why they're not utilizing them is that Google's done a really poor job of outreach to small businesses over the years. I mean, there's sort of a lag time in terms of commitment and being effective at actually messaging businesses. I think from the small business side of things, rightly so, that claiming your Google My Business profile used to be a set it and forget it type of thing, right? There just wasn't the level of opportunity for customers to engage with that business profile on a regular basis. That started to shift with Google's sort of native review program and the ability for business owners to respond to reviews. But I think we're now seeing there's a much richer, much deeper, more granular ability to influence what shows up on that knowledge panel, right? I mean, things like menus and direct booking, direct links to make a reservation, and posts are a fantastic new feature. I think that's basically a free ad where you can promote whatever you want when somebody searches your business. That's a phenomenal feature that we found single digit percentages of business owners using regularly. There's Q&A, which isn't necessarily a native GMB Google My Business feature, but appears very prominently on the knowledge panel. I think that's dramatically underutilized. So there's just a lot of opportunity. And so I think it's a combination of sort of historical relevance of needing to maintain a Google My Business listing actively on the part of the business owner, Google's sort of historical struggle to message and empathize with the business owner, and then just the sheer number of features they've rolled out in the last 18 months. So kind of that combination of factors, I think, is playing into it.
So is your role going to be to make sure that your customers or your clients know that these exist, so you're kind of consulting them, or are you creating tools around this? I mean, how are you approaching it?
So yeah, it's actually a combination of both. And this is one of the things that got me excited about ThriveHive as an opportunity, as opposed to just, joining an agency or becoming a product guy at some other software company, is that there's a pretty strong commitment to a sort of blended model of both human guidance and software. And so the answer to your question is both of those. Initially, this product was in the works and actually launched or was live to the public anyway before I signed on with ThriveHive, which is our free Google My Business grader tool. And so that's basically a one-click authorization where you say, hey, yes, I allow ThriveHive to see what's going on my Google My Business profile. And then we then, highlight all of the features that you could be using but maybe haven't been so far with a kind of numerical 0 to 100 grade. And we've got a little bit of intelligence there around, hey, if you're a restaurant, you should probably have a pretty steady stream of like weekly reviews. But if you're in, whatever, car insurance or something like that, it's maybe a little bit less. And you should be posting a lot more actively in sort of, high foot traffic type businesses, that sort of thing. So it's a sort of a customized grade around how well you're utilizing these features. So that's kind of the first angle. And then the second angle around guidance is and this is again something that the team at ThriveHive sort of perceived before I got there, but I totally conclusion totally resonates with me based on what we saw at Get Listed. You can show a business a grade and show them all these things that they need to do, but a lot of times that list is pretty overwhelming. There's like 20 things that they all need to do, and they've got 10 minutes a week to worry about marketing. So the guidance angle kind of plays in. We've sort of converted that static checklist into kind of an ongoing set of recommendations. And we have human beings on our, you know, on our team who sort of check in on you from time to time and see kind of where you're stumbling and what we can actually help you with. And so that's kind of the, service path is like, hey, you know, this is a really important thing. You really should be adding a couple more categories to your listing. Would you like us to help you with that? Is kind of our mindset in terms of potentially turning this into a paid service.
So now I know why you're so excited to be there. it sounds like a huge opportunity. It's only going to be getting bigger. And, you know, one of the other things you said a little earlier is that Google has done a really poor job of even educating the market that these tools exist. And the fact that you can actually play that role some, also even tap into them from a product standpoint, there's obviously a lot of opportunity there. So that's great.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, I don't mean that to be a criticism of the people who have been working on messaging small businesses at Google. I think that their outreach team, the team that's behind the Google My Biz Twitter handle, for example, is fantastic. They're an amazing resource that businesses don't use enough. I think it's much more a question of sort of, you know, higher up the corporate ladder, who's making decisions on how many resources to put into messaging. You know, we don't see television ads and, retargeting ads and that sort of thing, nearly to the extent that we saw with Facebook when they were first kind of ramping up, and that we see with some of the things even Square is doing in terms of video storytelling around their customers. So I think, you know, I think we'll probably start seeing more of that from Google, but I think it's been primarily just we're focused on the Fortune 500 AdWords revenue first, and eventually we'll get down to the small business level. And I think that the folks on the team at Google have been doing the best they can with limited resources.
So we are both entrepreneurs, and I know that a lot of people who listen to this podcast are also entrepreneurs. And so I kind of want to take a step back, because I have questions, David. I have questions about how you got started, and you know, I knew of you from Get Listed before I actually got to meet you and know you. And so I'll kind of start there. I'm really curious to know how you got started with Get Listed. Where did that idea come from? You know, what had to occur to even make what you did? You know, tell me a little more about that.
Yeah. So we started Get Listed I think the formal launch was like January of 2009, but we sort of started the thought process behind it in mid 2008. And it was soon after the 10-pack came out, soon after the Google Local Business Center, which is now Google My Business, was kind of really getting ramped up. And I had been doing web design primarily in WordPress, you know, pretty standard sort of solo web designer for the previous couple of years. And as soon as this, as soon as the 10-pack came out, it was like, whoa, all of my, you know, local business clients, like my commercial real estate guys and my, you know, financial planners and that sort of thing. It's like, this is a major opportunity for them. And so I kind of shifted a little bit away from design and more into SEO. It's kind of one of the things that got me into it. And I what I found was, as I was, you know, doing more, well, I sort of started the local search ranking factors survey and, you know, developed built a sort of friend circle with people like Mike Blumenthal and Mary Bowling and Andrew Shotland. And sort of, it was a very small community at the time. And I found in talking to them in terms of what was working and in terms of giving consultations to clients, it was like, we were kind of recommending a lot of the same set of things to these clients. And so, it sort of felt like this could be turned into a software product, although I didn't really know that much about software in order to build it. And so at the same time, a guy that I knew in from the SEO Moz forums, Pat Sexton, he and I sort of, I honestly don't even remember exactly how it happened, but we sort of started chatting in a private message on the Moz forum, and we're like kind of thinking along the same lines. So we got together and sort of spec'd out an initial product in an afternoon in San Francisco. And that sort of became Get Listed. And so it was basically the goal was to sort of templatize all of the stuff that I'd been recommending, that Pat had a little bit more experience in terms of, sort of productizing advice, I guess I would say. And, cause he had a Google Webmaster, sort of a webmaster recommendation site for traditional websites. So we kind of put our heads together and figured out how to productize this sort of consistent set of things that every business should do, the Local Business Center, with Yahoo Small Business, with Bing Places, with Foursquare, with Yelp, and sort of went from there. So that was kind of the genesis of Get Listed.
So at some point you had a discussion, maybe it was with Rand, maybe it was with who knows, at Moz, or, you know, I mean, about essentially being rolled into Moz and of course becoming what is today Moz Local. How did that come about?
Sure. So Rand, this is actually, some of this is in Lost and Founder, which is a great book that Rand published earlier this year. He, you know, probably most people are familiar with the travails that he went through of raising money for Moz. It was really their second round, but their first big round, which ended up coming from Foundry. And so he and I had talked the summer before when he thought he was close to raising, from a different VC, and the time felt pretty good. And, you know, we sort of just kind of kept in touch, and through that process. And then when that round fell through, it was like, okay, well, we're kind of back to square one. At the same time, Get Listed had grown to a point where it was really too much for two people, myself and Chris, to manage. I mean, we were doing 100,000 business lookups a month, not too far into 2012. And it was the kind of thing where, having just seen what Rand had gone through in terms of raising money, I was like, well, might be better just to kind of roll into, you know, what Moz is doing. And they had sort of luckily just closed that round with Foundry. That's, I think it was the spring of 2012. So Rand and I sort of stayed in touch. And then what really brought some urgency to it was just kind of a lucky break on our part, which was that another software company reached out and was interested in doing a partnership. And I sort of, you know, I was very transparent with them. I was like, hey, you know, we're open to a partnership, but we don't necessarily want to string you along. Like, we, you know, we've been talking to Moz sort of casually, and feels like, you know, we're close to getting something done. And they basically made an offer within a week. And so that kind of brought some urgency to all of our discussions, and ended up, you know, still felt like Moz was the best fit at the end, just in terms of my sort of personal relationship with Rand and kind of their experience in building software for the SEO world, right? Just was kind of the better fit. But I'm actually still really good friends with the other company as well. And, you know, definitely have some, you know, sort of honest regrets about, you know, what might've been there as well. Even though Moz worked out absolutely great. And I don't have not a day goes by where I have any kind of regret about the decision. So.
But the motivation to do that was because you thought that the only way to sustain and grow and scale was to take on more money, and you didn't want to go through that? Or, I mean, did you have any other options?
I mean, the other option would have been to, you know, take out a loan and hire probably two more developers and build a paid product to get to market with, that would have taken a year. And, you know, I needed to be making some income, and it was just a hard spot to be in. We had a little bit of revenue in terms of affiliate revenue that we were sending at the time to, I'm trying to remember at the time we sold, I know we were sending some leads to Yext, but I can't remember if there was another company at that time. That was a very small source of income. And then the Local U conference series actually started under the Get Listed umbrella. So we had some revenue from that as well, but that was like never designed to be sort of a profit-making enterprise. So it was kind of like, we would have had to develop a paid product basically from scratch and get that into market. And I just didn't want to take the risk on, you know, losing money at that stage. I didn't really have the money to lose. So
no, that makes sense. And it's interesting because it reminds me a lot of how Raven was created, because we were just a little boutique agency in Nashville, and the tools we had made, which were not called Raven because it didn't exist at the time, were things that we had made because we thought they were useful. We were giving them away because we were essentially treating them as link bait, you know, and which was working. But we gave them away, and I think Get Listed was always free. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we gave them away. We had it on AWS. We were like one of the first cloud-based rank trackers at the time. And that was one of the things that was obviously costing a lot of money. And we started looking at our Amazon Web Services bills and we were like, cannot afford this. Like, this is completely out of hand.
Yep.
You know, we're happy with the amount of business we're getting, but it's not enough to cover these costs.
Yep.
And the costs just keep increasing each month. And so that was where we had to take a step back and pretty much go, you know, how can we make SEOs pay for this? I think, when did you start Get Listed?
It's 2000. Yeah. Well, January 20th of 2009 was when we launched. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So we started like in, I don't know, 07 or 08 or something like that, but it was around the same time. And back then all you had was like, SEO chat tools, and maybe some other tools, and everything was free with the exception of like Web CEO, which you had to install in Windows or something like that. Everything was free, and nobody in SEO would pay for software for the most part, because that's why we were in SEO. like I don't want to pay for ads. Yep. I don't want to pay for anything. Yep. I just want to, you know, find opportunities and go after them and get the free traffic. And so that was a really interesting place to be, because it was either we're going to shut it down or we were going to make something that we'd have paid. I think the difference between the position you were in and we were in was that it wasn't a two-person thing. I mean, like I say boutique, but I mean, you know, we had 10 people and we had a whole development shop going. And so we had enough revenue that we could kind of shift some of our time over to it.
Yep.
But just like what you said, which was, you know what, this is going to take a year or more to try to get it to a place where you can charge for it and that type of thing. The same was true with us. And it did take a year or more. I mean, it was an absolute complete struggle. It was extremely time consuming. We got lucky in that we were fairly successful with that product, but that's rare. I mean, from an entrepreneurial perspective, and it doesn't matter if you think you know what you're doing or whatever it is, you know, most things don't succeed, especially if you're just bootstrapping it and you've never done it before. Yep. Because that's the other thing is I think we were both kind of people who have never done a product before like this. It's one of those things where I think you probably made the right decision and the best decision under the circumstances. I'm not sure if we made the right decision. I mean, in other words, we did because it became what it became. I mean, so in other words, like, yeah, you know, after the fact, it's like, oh yeah, of course that's what we should have done.
Right.
But, you know, looking back on it and thinking, you know, if I'm thinking about the entrepreneur who might be listening to this right now and are sort of like, so what do I do? What do I do? Yep. You know, do I try to, you know, leverage a really good relationship with somebody at a company and just kind of, you know, bring it over there? Do I just suck it up and live in poverty and try to make this thing work?
Yep.
And I would say that I would almost be 50-50 knowing what I know now, what it took to make Raven become what it is from a bootstrap perspective.
Yep.
And I would actually, I would consider more, way more than I did back then, doing the decision you made. Mm-hmm. then, you know, it's kind of interesting. I mean, well, I really hadn't thought about it until right now.
Yeah. I mean, and I, like I said, I don't have any regrets about choosing to sell, and I don't have any regrets about choosing to sell to Moz. Like I was very well taken care of at Moz. It's a great team. I ended up working with a couple of close friends in Portland. They acquired a couple months later. That was Matt Brown and Tim Resnick from AudienceWise. If I had it to do again, I would make the same decision. Like that's for me, but in terms of like, it is different with Tidings, and potentially it would be different with a future company because now I'm not starting from scratch. I do have a little bit of a cushion, to kind of work from. So, I don't know, but knowing if it is your first company and you do have a great relationship with somebody like Rand, who's, you know, just a great guy, it would be worth exploring that and deepening that relationship sooner rather than later, in my opinion. So,
that's interesting. And by the way, all the other things you said about Moz and about Rand, totally agree with. I even have a designer that I worked with for many years.
That's who right. Ended up Jeff.
Jeff Crump.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who is this the greatest human being. And he has only had praise for working with that team. Yep. And so, yeah, that, I think that's, I'm glad you said that. So with Tidings, it is kind of interesting because as you said, you're in a different space, you know, because you made the decision you did and it ended up being a really positive experience, ended up even getting you in a place where you could even financially do this sort of next thing, this next product, which is Tidings. So I have conflicting questions I wanted to ask you about this. You know, one is on the financial side and the other one is actually about why Tidings?
Yeah.
and so I think I'm actually going to go with that. I think we've talked enough about money
all
and
right,
stuff.
Good. Okay. That's more so, interesting.
Yeah, you're
to
like,
me
thank
anyways.
Goodness. Yeah, you're like, oh God, when is he going to get off this?
Yeah.
So how do you go from a focus on local SEO to waking up and saying, you know what?
Yep.
Today I'm going to solve what I see as a problem or something missing in the market. And it has to do with how small businesses communicate. And it's going to be all about email.
Yep.
You know, so how did you get there?
Sure. So the first thing is I was, I'm guessing you may have felt this with Raven on a similar timeline in terms of just working on the same product in my case, it was like 8.5 or 9 years. It was like, okay, I'm kind of ready for a new challenge. So that was one of the factors. The second one was sort of what we talked about very early on in the call is that I saw the trend at the time with Google and I was wrong about, or not wrong, but at least I've been more slowly proven right than I expected in terms of the monetization side of Google. So I had seen Google and Facebook moving so heavily to monetize. I was like, email is going to be the last organic channel standing. And I had started a newsletter during my time off just because I was still reading all this stuff and still, you know, talking to Mike and some of the other friends I mentioned earlier. And I had never done a newsletter before. And I kept seeing in all these surveys of professional marketers, you know, email is the top performing channel, 40-to-1 ROI. You know, it's like this hidden secret of marketing or this cockroach of marketing that gets ignored. But, you know, having done the newsletter myself for a few months manually in MailChimp, I was like, these things take a couple hours every time you want to send one. This really sucks. And so I basically built the product of Tidings based on the process that I used to curate my own newsletter. That has led to a great market fit with certain audiences and a poor market fit with others. But it was really I was my own first customer in that case, having tried to send, tried to send a weekly newsletter and just been frustrated with how time consuming it was. So the goal is really to help businesses, grow and maintain a channel that they own, as opposed to renting space on Facebook or Google. But at the same time, try to leverage the time they're already putting in terms of reading and curating content and thinking about how their world is changing, making them better able to leverage that into multiple channels, of which email is one. So that was kind of the genesis behind the idea.
Yeah. So you were solving the problem of time. It's basically like, this is incredibly inefficient.
Yep.
And I can speed this up, and I can leverage the places where I'm already, where I have to spend the time.
Yep.
So I think good examples would be, you know, I am on Facebook, or I am tweeting this, or I am publishing on my blog. For those who don't know how Tidings works, it can aggregate all those in a fairly automated way.
Yep.
and create a really nice looking email newsletter that just gets sent to whoever's on your list.
Yep.
Is that a pretty good description?
Got it. Yeah. So, I mean, there's definitely, MailChimp has an RSS to email feature, but there's no way to customize anything about it. So you're just stuck with whatever articles show up in the feed. So I wanted to build something that was sort of, you know, using that concept as a baseline, using all of your branding and also the content that you've shared on social media, but then letting you sort of manipulate it and, you know, discarding certain articles that you didn't want to include and enhancing other articles that you do want to include, you know, adding a call to action, which I think is really, really important for I don't typically use it myself very much, just because I'm not necessarily, I don't use my newsletter as a lead gen source. But I think that the ability that for email to be a 40-to-1 ROI channel, a lot of the products out there aren't really geared towards conversion. I think that's one thing that one key feature that I felt like was important from the beginning. So just like you said, the whole point is to save time, to leverage the work you're already doing to greater effect and to greater organic effect than some of the social platforms will let you do anymore.
So we both know that you can make the greatest tool ever. And you know that it solves a particular problem better than anything that's out there, if something else is even out there that does it. But the the action of letting people know about that is easier said than done.
Yep.
And so you, like everybody, I'm sure struggled with, you know, how do you market that? With limited budget and that type of thing. That's always been something that I've struggled with and I've written about in the past. And,
yep.
So I'm curious to know, for you, from a bootstrap perspective, what have you done? What have you tried? What has worked for you and what hasn't?
Yep. So a couple of things. I think my biggest sort of market fit mistake that I made with sort of the business plan behind Tidings was overestimating the extent to which my network does anything related to email. So my small business audience, I don't think necessarily sends that many emails or has a MailChimp account or whatever. And the agencies that follow me on Twitter, you know, whatever, read my blogs, that kind of thing. I think they're primarily focused on SEO they don't necessarily have this holistic view of marketing that I think, I think is increasingly important, but it just may not be the right business fit for a lot of agencies that I talk to. So it's been a little harder for me to kind of get the word out than I initially anticipated. That said, I think I definitely always had agencies in mind as a primary consumer of the product. We had an agency plan within probably 4 months of launching our sort of MVP, small business focused version. And I think that that's been a primary channel, just knowing that agencies by and large are the ones that are executing marketing for business owners, with any kind of regularity. So I do think it's easier to reach those agencies for me through some of the social and other channels, like speaking at conferences and that sort of thing. I don't necessarily, I haven't really tried to crack the direct to small business channel very hard. I've run a couple of, you know, $1,000, $2,000 Facebook ad campaigns that basically led to two or three customers and at a, you know, $19 or $30 price point. That doesn't really pencil out very well. So I think that's really, in terms of advice for entrepreneurs, like, don't be super overconfident in the conversion of your own personal network, and really make sure that your product is at a price point that your cost of acquisition can sustain. I think those are two. I don't know. Like I said, the first one was definitely a mistake. The second one was kind of I launched it at that price point, knowing that that was going to be a challenge to acquire through anything except inbound. But definitely overestimated the first audience.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, and it is a very different audience, I think, that you described, which is that it's not the, say, local SEOs, these people over here. It's actually these agencies, and if you're an agency, it ends up that the cost of tidings is kind of cheap in that sense. It costs more.
Yeah,
that's exactly it.
Yeah, so.
And so we know, because we, you know, I think we both have experience from a, you know, agency perspective, having clients, that it's something, if you can create an efficiency for an agency where they can still charge the amount they've been charging, but they don't have to spend the same amount of time on it and the quality remains the same. Yep.
Or better, actually, our open and click rates are well above MailChimp's averages. So it's, in addition to saving time, I think you're actually producing a better product, but.
It's awesome. I love it. Well, since we're talking about that, I also read that on your most recent like update that you made, that you have three big new features that still need polish. And I want to try to like squeeze one of them out of you and have you tell us.
You'll get one. So, and the other, and that actually ties into the previous topic as well. So the great thing that we did with Get Listed and that Moz Local continued, and I think you've seen other products do something similar, is kind of having a freemium hook where you can get this report. And HubSpot does it with their grader tool, and ThriveHive, we're doing it with our, you know, Google My Business grader tool. Some kind of free, easy hook to get people into your product funnel, if you will. So that's really the next thing the next sort of big feature that we will be releasing that's already kind of on our staging server is a one-click authenticate your MailChimp account and get a much more useful report for someone who publishes a newsletter than MailChimp provides natively. So we'll basically, you authenticate your account and we'll show you a little bit more around sort of subscriber intelligence in aggregate than MailChimp typically does. I find their reporting, well, first of all, I love MailChimp. Their API is fantastic. Their pricing model is fantastic. I love the company culture. But I don't think that they're geared primarily towards more sort of e-commerce style businesses or retail type businesses. And I think their reporting reflects that. So it's very campaign driven. It's very sort of transactional ROI driven. But, you know, if you're a realtor, just as an example, and you send, we'll call it, you know, 12 or 15 newsletters a year, you know, it's probably more interesting to you to know, okay, who didn't open your newsletter in, you know, January, February, and March, but has opened it the last 4 months. They might be looking to sell their house or, you know, looking to move or whatever. And so those are the kinds of insights that our new email intelligence briefing is kind of my at least temporary name for it, is designed to show you, just kind of like in aggregate, here are your top subscribers. Here are the ones that have, you know, their behaviors changed recently. Those sorts of insights that are available in MailChimp, but you really, really, really have to dig for them. So that's kind of one angle to it. And then second one is just based on our personal product. This may not apply as well for other newsletter types, but for anything that you send in tidings, sort of a content algorithm where we show you the top sources, the top keywords, the top authors, those sorts of things from the content that you've shared in terms of what people are actually clicking on in your newsletter. So that hopefully will give you a better sense of what to share in the future and the kinds of topics you should continue to talk about.
All right, that's really interesting, and it conjures up ideas of some other, I would say, products where essentially leverages the existing platform and enhances it, makes it better. And correct me if I'm wrong, but one that comes to mind is like Litmus.
Yep.
Isn't that sort of a company that sort of works and plays well with a platform, but actually enhances it?
They do. They have a little bit different. I would say they're a little bit different. They basically, well, at least how I've used Litmus, like we've used Litmus to build our template. So I'm pretty familiar with them. They basically, they're a browser preview tool for all of these various email clients that people use, like Outlook on an iPhone and, you know, Gmail on Android and Gmail 5 on you know, whatever flavor of Android and that kind of thing. So that's really their main product. They may have other solutions I'm not aware of that are more of that sort of barnacle on additional systems. But I think their main product is a little different from my understanding.
Okay. No. So let's we can kind of wrap it up. We've had a pretty good conversation. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, same here, man. We should do this more often, even if it's not on a podcast.
Okay. Yeah. Even if I'm not recording you every time.
Right.
Okay. I agree. And maybe with beer, that'd be nice.
Yes.
In person's always good. So I always just really like to talk about the now and the future when it comes to certain industry things. And since I would say the majority of your experience is with business and local, particularly SEO, I have a couple questions. And the first one is, what's your take on small business and voice?
Sure.
And voice search? And, you know, I mean, is that something small businesses can, you know, is there something they can do about it?
I mean, right.
How are you going to compete to be the one person, to be the one company that is the result when somebody asks a question? You know, what are your thoughts?
Right. So I don't necessarily know that there's anything that I would do differently for voice than I would do for mobile at this stage. I think everything I've seen is that it's largely, you know, Google's trying to use a similar algorithm anyway for populating voice results as for mobile. But the algorithm for both of those rewards an interface based on structured data. And in the case of local businesses, that's primarily coming from Google My Business. So I don't know if there's anything different I would do, you know, for Google Assistant than I would do for mobile search results. But I do think that the website as the consumer destination, there's just no place for it in a voice result. You're not going to sit there for 30 seconds while you're voice assistant reads, you know, the first two paragraphs of a web page and decide whether or not you want to do business with that company. They're much more sort of snap decisions based on structured information.
So you mentioned structured data and you know, for those who are listening, we're pretty much talking about schema.org vocabulary. It's one thing to list the company info and or product schema or whatever it might be. But what about doing things around voice assistants? So that's another sort of structure and an example that would be, should a small business be having pages or a page of FAQs?
Yes.
That have certain questions and answers that might be asked that would result, you know, so you said yes. So what would that look like? I mean, give me an example of what that look like for a small business.
Sure. I mean, so two things. First of all, yes, they should have an FAQs page where they're asking and answering the top questions that they're getting on the phone already, that people are calling in with or that are emailing in through their contact form. You know, I would argue each major question deserves its own page. I think that'll give it the best chance to rank. But we're actually seeing Google try to address this with their Q&A product outside of a website, right? So those questions and answers should also be on your knowledge panel on your Google My Business profile. So even in that sort of longer tail, less structured format, Google is still trying to capture that information on a knowledge panel and not on a web page.
So we've gone full circle now, because in the very beginning, we talked about how Google is actually investing more into their tools for posts and videos and menus and messaging and all that stuff and Q&A. And so do you, or would you recommend for a small business to first get their own house in order, meaning like do your website and do all these things? Or would you recommend that, that if they have to make a choice, they should actually just go to Google, make sure all their information is correct versus worrying about having a site or having their site set up correctly.
So what are your thoughts? Look at it in this way. I would say every small business needs its own website. But if you're just getting started, think of your initial website as a starter home, right? It is something that is not intended to be a long-term presence, but it's something that you can put a stake in the ground that's yours, that you own, that you can build on over time. But from there, I think you need it as a baseline presence, right? But in terms of where to focus your optimization efforts, I think starting out, everybody should be looking at GMB first. It's easier to update, right? You don't have to hire a web designer to figure out how to implement schema or to update a title tag or whatever. It's like you posting your top questions and answers, or you responding to reviews or asking your customers for reviews. It's you uploading better photos so that people are more likely to engage with your listing on a phone as opposed to your competitor. So those kinds of things are so much easier for a business to accomplish. They tend to take a little bit less time. They're certainly less technical. And so I think GMB is a starting point for an SEO campaign. I don't think it's the starting point for a fundamental digital presence. I think everybody should have a website, but that website doesn't need to be, you know, a 50-page website built on WordPress with a custom $5,000 theme. Not every business needs that, and I wouldn't advise most businesses to start there.
So what I hear you saying is, if I am a small business with limited budget, limited resources to get the most out of visibility and traffic from Google, the very first thing I should do is I should focus on my presence on Google My Business. Yep. And then everything else is secondary.
Yep. I think to that. So that you're going to get a bigger bang for your buck focusing on GMB than on your website in terms of SEO. The line that I've been using, two lines that I've been using over the last couple of years are, your website is no longer a destination for consumers. It's a data source. That's an exaggeration. Of course, you're still getting some traffic, but Mike Blumenthal actually did a case study with his favorite client, Barbara Oliver, who's a jeweler in New York, in Buffalo. She gets 75% of her new customers come in directly through GMB, not even touching her website. And I don't think that that's that atypical. She obviously has a really well-optimized GMB profile, thanks to Mike. But I think that directionally rings true with what I've seen from other local businesses as well. So your website is no longer a destination. It's a data source. The second comment that I make is that I really feel in the age of voice, in the age of mobile, in the age of knowledge panels and structured data, that Google's ideal website, at least for a local business, is an XML file. They basically want to know who you are, what products you sell, what services you offer, when you're open. This is all stuff that doesn't need a beautiful, fancy wrapper, right? They just need that data. They need it as quickly as possible, as cleanly as possible. So that's kind of the shift. I think that, you know, the market, the SEO or the, excuse me, digital marketing industry has sort of conditioned businesses to think around, hey, you need a drag and drop editor and you need, 5,200 possible themes to choose from. And you need to be able to move, you know, this widget here and all of these things, right? That's how a lot of these websites are sold by Wix and, even Squarespace. Constant Contact, their tagline for a long time for small businesses was be a marketer, right? I don't think that that's really necessary or the right lens that most businesses should view their website through. It really is something much more stripped down and functional is going to perform a lot better for them in search results.
It's funny, as you were saying that, I was just thinking, even before you mentioned Wix, I was just thinking about how there's a bunch of services and agencies right now that do not like what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well. They're like, no.
I think it's a good place to make a margin, right? I mean, I think, you know, there's the margin on web design services is substantial. And if you can sell the right client on it, great. But I think in terms of, you asked me from a small business perspective, right? Where are they going to get the biggest bang for the buck? I don't think it's a custom $5,000 or $10,000 website. I think it's, you know, paying attention to GMB, you know, hopefully through ThriveHive's, getting started with ThriveHive's Grader. Maybe it's, you know, adding on a product like GatherUp from Mike Blumenthal in terms of getting reviews. And it's a very functional, basic website that Google can read and that loads quickly for your customers. I think those are much better building blocks to start with than a fancy, expensive custom website.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, and the way I did ask it was, what's the primary thing they should do, yep, and what should they do with limited resources and budget? Yep. You know, at the same time, I think I would assume that both of us would agree that, at the same time, depending on the type of business and that type of thing, if and when you have the resources, that anything else you can do is supplemental. Meaning, I mean, as in like in a good way, as in having that site, writing those things, creating that content, whatever it might be, even from a link building perspective, yep, could still help. It's not that you shouldn't ever do those, but if you can only do so many things, then GMB is the thing to do. Yep.
And just think of it, you know, in terms of SEO, right? It takes a long time for SEO to kick in to start to rank for, you know, multiple keywords and multiple service lines and that sort of thing. Your GMB profile shows up every time somebody searches for your business, right? So if you have crappy photos or poor reviews or no reviews or unanswered questions, I mean, that's something that every potential customer is going to see. So start with the traffic that you're already getting on your business name in Google before trying to expand that universe.
Awesome. Hey, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah, it's great. Thanks. Like I said, let's do it more often. Doesn't have to be recorded, but I think it'd be fun.
It would be kind of weird. Yeah. It would be weird if it was recorded all the time. Yeah.